Hi, everybody. I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, everybody. I'm Beth. I'm Beth. I'm an alcoholic.
When Dave asked me to, if I would do the workshop, one of the first things that I wanted to do was, well, not do it myself, of course. but the reason I asked Beth was because I've been around this program for a while. I had a lot of years and I relapsed, and then I had a lot of years and I relapsed, and then it took me years to find excuse me, my way back. And when I showed up this time, I kind of believed I'd done it all, been there, done that, done the work, done the meetings. I just believed I'd done it all and it just wasn't going to work for me. And this God of mine hooked me up with Beth, and it was a totally new experience for me. And I had a spiritual experience on the journey that I took with her. So, of course, I wanted to share that with all of you. The only other thing that I do want to share is we kind of changed the topic. Because Dave named it for us. Those of you who know Dave know he likes to do things. Even though he was quoting Beth when he did name it, right? Right. And the reason Beth and I got together and we just kind of were, you know, where are we at and what's going on and what does this look like for us? And as she knows, and some of you know, the last year of my life has been very difficult. In the last 12 months, I went from losing my mother, who was my best friend and who was with me at the time. Literally, I was with her when she passed. And of course, it was very traumatic. And kind of regrouped and came through that. And me and my significant other, boyfriend, fiance, whatever name you want to give Fred,
We love Fred.
We had put money on property down in South Carolina where we're going to retire in a few years. And in the process of that, we had our life savings stolen from us, $200,000. So we kind of regrouped with that and trying to move forward. And last week, my stepson died at 28 years old, Fred's youngest son. Found in his car dead. We had seen him an hour before. He was fine. And, you know, my head wants to do, you know, why am I here and not him? And through all of this, kind of, it's like I had two choices. I either leaned in or I leaned out. And I have a history of leaning out. When life gets tough, I need to be in control. I need to run the show. I need to make sense out of things that make no sense to me. And that, to me, is a lot of ego stuff. And it's almost like standing up straight and the shoulders go back, which is almost, it's a lean out. Because I was looking today of like what lean in means, and they use it a lot with like skiers. And when you go around on those bends and you have to lean into the curve, you know, for me, it's like when life got tough, I stood up straight instead of leaning on anything. Well, I leaned on myself is what I did. So the only way that this year has, while I'm sitting here clean and sober and in, believe it or not, happy and free, is because of leaning in. So we want to talk a little bit about what that means for us and what that means for this, you know, we're given a program. Here's your 12 steps. Like, well, go work it. And I had no idea how to apply that to my life. And I wanted Beth to tell me how and to fix it for me and to be responsible for me. And I wanted to be the best sponsee ever. And she wasn't about that at all. Huh, Becca?
No.
You know, Beth was all about accountability and fighting for your recovery and wanting it and being willing to work for it. I remember going to her house one time and I was like 2 minutes late. And oh, you know me, that's like, no, gosh, no, I'm 5 minutes early and upset. My homework's done and everything. And I don't know if you remember this. She said, oh, yeah, I used to have a sponsor that came late all the time. One time she was 5 minutes late, and I just told her to take her coffee and go on back home. And I thought, oh, my God. Needless to say, I was never late again. But there's something about accountability and owning it and not being Beth dependent, instead my life being God dependent. That was a whole switch for me. So that's kind of what we want to bring to these guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I basically have the same story as you, where I got a sponsor. I had 6 years sober and wanted to drink and drive my car off an overpass. Somebody pointed out to me a couple of months ago or last year or something that it was an awful plan because I drove a Saturn and there was no way it was going to make it off of the overpass. So yet again, my greatest plans were just stupid. But this woman walked into my life, and I'm literally sitting in a hotel, Area 44 convention in Parsippany, and I'm like a broken human being. Like, think about your darkest, darkest day, multiply it by 10 because I've got it worse than everybody else. And she walks up to me and she goes, "Are you done?" There was no, "Oh, it's going to be okay. We'll love you till you love yourself." Like, she's just like, we found out years later that like 8 young people asked her to sponsor them within like a 3-month period. And she like, she comes from the school of you don't say no. And we found out like 7 or 8 years later that she hated young people. So it explains so much. But let me tell you something. My sponsor, Cass, so she will always be my sponsor till the day I die. And every 5-7 years, I get like somebody in town who I can be eyeball to eyeball with, or somebody I can go through this process again with. And now I have Nicoletta, who's amazing. I'll be talking about her probably a lot, and Cass a lot. But she will always be my sponsor. And the reason for that is that she has always allowed me to have my experience. She never, ever once put the expectations of what she wanted for her recovery on me. There were 13 of us that she was sponsoring at the time. We had nothing in common, but there was nothing that could break us apart. Because the only thing we had was this recovery process in common. And every single thing was based on no judgment, no labels, and complete honesty at all times. Now, I've gotten a lot kinder with my honesty over the years, and I try to be a little kinder in my honesty. But it's like I was raised in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober when I was 17, and I floundered in these rooms for 6 years because people kept trying to love me, and people kept trying to build my self-esteem, and people kept trying to hold me. Well, let's just be very clear on how awful that really was. First off, I come from an incredibly abusive background, so stay the F away from me. Don't touch me. Mm-hmm. The only way to build self-esteem is through esteemable acts, which only I can do. And you can't receive love unless you can love. And so I needed Cass to create a safe space for me to have an experience. And I did. And I've had that experience half a dozen times in the last 2 years. I'm sober 28 years. So I get to be a part of this process. And the only way that it works, the only way that this program works when you sponsor the way that I do, the way Cass does, the way Karen does, the way Becca does, is that you have to want it. This is your process. This is your life. You want to go and, spend 6 months on your inventory? Well, good luck with that. At least I will just be here when you're ready. You may call me. I'll be like, did you do any writing? Are you going to do any writing? Like, why aren't you writing? But I'm not going to make any statements about your recovery. It's not mine. It's yours. And I have no idea what God has in store for you. You have asked me to step in and create a safe space for you to go have your experience. I'm going to dole out to you. It was doled out to me, and you're going to have a completely unique experience with it. And that's the beauty of this program. It's why people who would not normally mix are bound together for life. I don't really have much in common with most of the people I love. I just don't. You know what I mean? Like, but we can join together in harmonious action, I think it says in the book, and we create this fellowship where I feel safe and protected always, because I know that we are all powerless, we are all human, and we who share this solution all have a connection with a power greater than ourselves, which makes us miracles, absolute miracles. And so when we say lean in, for me what that means is trust us. Trust us. Trust that there is something out there that wants nothing but beautiful and wonderful things for you. And Cass pointed out to me when I went through the book the first time that it only once tells us in this book what God wants for us. Only one time in this book does it direct us and say, God wants this for you. And it's to be happy, joyous, and free. And you have to go work it out. Go work. I don't care. I don't know if you should get married or not. I don't know if you should. I don't know. And anybody that does know, I don't know, man. I stay away from those people. You know, I'm self-directed idiot over here, just wandering through life, hoping everything doesn't blow up at some point. You do not want to be taking advice on your life from me. So, so when we say lean in, it's really about trusting the entire process. It's not take what you want and leave the rest. That's not leaning in. It's literally drinking the Kool-Aid. Have an experience. And I will tell you 100%, if you do this process and you go, that was dumb, it didn't do anything for me, I'm going to be like, well, let's get you connected with Refuge Recovery or Smart Recovery or some other mode of recovery, because I only want one thing for every human being I meet, and that's for them to be happy, joyous, and free. And let's get you there. And if I can't help you get there, then I will find someone who can help you get there. And so when we say lean in, it means if you don't know if this is going to work for you. And I don't know why. The sponsees that usually ask me to sponsor them are the ones where this is their last-ditch effort. All right, Beth, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. But I literally had a woman in Charlotte. She was in her late 60s. She's getting ready to retire, and she's about to quit AA. And she came to me, and she goes, Beth, I'll do whatever you tell me to do, but if this doesn't work, I'm quitting AA. And I looked at her, and I'm like, so no pressure at all? No pressure. Okay. But now, I mean, 10, 12 years later, she's still in AA. She had this amazing experience. She's retired. She scuba dives and weightlifts. And I'm all like, that's just too much activity for me. But she's this amazing light in my life that I get to reflect with. And we don't have a lot of contact, but when we do connect, it's just such a beautiful thing that God is out there. The age of miracles really is not over. And it's funny, when you really start to look at it in the context of the reality that is Alcoholics Anonymous, no, it's by no means just words in a book that were written in the 1930s, 1930s. Somebody who knows more than me? Yeah, way back then, in some other century, they're not just right. Mm-hmm. They're not just words on a book. They actually are still very alive in my life. And so we're going to talk tonight. We're going to do things a little out of the water, or a little out of order, and out of the water. I hate the ocean.
I love the water.
It's fucking gross. Sand is the devil. The ocean is disgusting. Sorry, I was just there all day yesterday. It was awful. Yeah, we'll go into that later. But
ebb and flow, baby.
That ocean is pissing me off. But we're going to do things a little out of order, and tonight we're really going to spend the remainder of the time talking about step two. And if you don't believe in God, what my sponsor told me was that if you can believe that I believe that I have a God, that's enough. If you want to go to bed tonight and go, Karen thinks there's a God, I'm just going to go with that, it's enough to get through this process completely successfully. That's all you need. But when we say lean in, when a thought crosses your mind, I 100% implore you, beg of you, because I can't speak English, I beg of you to bring a journal with you everywhere you go. Keep it in your bag. Keep it in your backpack. Bring it to this meeting. And what leaning in means is when that completely random, crazy thought runs through your head, just write it down. Give it space to be what it is, and it may turn out to be the next level of growth for you. It may turn out to be your grocery list. Either way, you win. That's what leaning in really means. It's, you know, going through this process, the entire reason, this will never keep you sober. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous will tell you that the only thing that has ever stood between you and a drink, will ever stand between you and a drink, is a power greater than yourself. So you are completely beyond human aid. That means that you can go through these steps 500 times and just keep getting drunk, unless you have a relationship with your higher power. So the whole goal of this, in step one, we admit we can't do this. I cannot do this anymore. I can't live with it. Can't live without it. In step two, we get just a little bit, just get like a, you know, like a whole punch of faith. A little blind faith if you have to. I had to have blind faith my first time. And then the third step, we say, I'm just going to do this process. I abandon everything. I'm just going to do this process. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 is to literally clear away everything that's stuffed inside of you. 10 is to keep you current. 11 is where we build a relationship with that power greater than ourselves. And in 12, we practice, and, you know, share. Yeah. You want to share. I don't like sharing. Everything's mine. So this whole process is really to build an inner voice, is to really, whatever you want to call it, I call it my gut. Some people call it the inner voice, their higher self, whatever it is, but it's to literally, like, in the eating disorder world, the goal is to do what's called intuitive eating, right? I'm hungry, I eat, I'm full, I stop eating. Our goal is to have intuitive life. I feel inspired to move, so I move. That requires me to let go of fear or to face fear. You know, I feel inspired. I people think I'm egotistical when I say this, but I live an inspired life. If I don't feel inspired to do something, I don't. Whether it's making the bed, paying the bills, or feeding my kids. And I'm an alcoholic. If I don't remain connected to a power greater than myself, I'm not paying the bills, I'm not making my bed, and I sure as hell ain't feeding those kids. Because I already did that so many times this week, it's like ridiculous. It's like repetitive. It's awful. Don't have children. No, I'm just kidding. I don't care if you have children. So when we say, sorry, I'm like a little off tonight, but
you're like always.
I'm always.
You're
a little
always.
Off. I'm always a little off. Yeah. I am. But so when we mean lean in, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying just go for it. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes. In fact, my sponsor will say 100 million times, you cannot make a mistake. You cannot make a mistake ever. It is all to the good because I'm either succeeding or I'm learning. And I can't succeed until I learn. And if I don't learn, I'm not moving. And if I'm not moving, I'm headed backwards to a drink. It doesn't matter what area of your life you're talking about. It's all the same. So we're moving towards an intuitive relationship with life.
Which is what happened with me. I mean, I was one of those that did the book and did the steps and couldn't understand why I kept going back to the drink or the drug. And when I started doing the work with a sponsor like Beth, it was my experience. And I mean, when I say she refused to be my experience, she really did. And this is how perfect I think that God knew me, because I wanted her to tell me how to feel. I wanted her to tell me what to do. I wanted her to tell me what was right and wrong, and didn't understand that that's what I'd look for my whole life, was somebody tell me how to be. What do you need me to be? I'll be that. I'll be whatever it is that you want me to be. And I had no worth, no self-value. I mean, I didn't even have a clue who I was, because I was always being who you needed me to be. And when she kind of stripped that from me, it was like, holy shit, what do I do now? So it was kind of like lean in or go run, like you always did. But if you showed up here, you know, like I did, and you were tired of running, and sick and tired of your life in general and just knew you couldn't, that didn't work and you couldn't do that anymore, which is our step one, you know, that, you know, unmanageability and acceptance, you know, leaning in didn't seem all that, it was like you kind of do it or not. Is really where I was at. And the less she wouldn't own my behavior, the more I was willing to talk about it and take a look at it. And somebody wasn't judging me for it. And I'm not saying you all ran around and judged me all the time. In my head, you were. You were judging everything I did and talking about it. I have to do it something different. And oh, my God. I don't know how I existed like that. So where we wanted to start with, why we're starting on chapter 4 tonight is because we are asking you to lean in as you take this experience, this process journey. With us, this journey. Yeah, because we're asking you to take a journey with us. And, you know, kind of one of the visualizations that I have when I think of leaning in, and I, of course, I saw it on a commercial. I just got a new Jeep, which I love.
That's your Jeep?
That's my Jeep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Don't you love my Jeep? That.
I'll take her out riding. And they had this commercial of a person in the Jeep, like, hanging out the window. And I don't know how you drive hanging out the window, but it looked good in the commercial. But that was the leaning out. I mean, like, how crazy and reckless. You hit one bump, and you're flying out of that Jeep, and you feel every bump in a Jeep, as fun as it is. So, you know, my choices are I'm leaning out or I'm leaning in. And when I lean in, I'm pretty safe, and I'm protected. And in that safeness and protection, I can have a new experience instead of just hanging on for my life, which is always what I was doing. I mean, literally hanging on. For my life. So, yeah. So we're going to take a ride.
In the yellow Jeep?
It's white.
Oh, it was white?
Yeah.
I'm so observant. Is there a yellow car out there?
Oh, does somebody God. Have a yellow Jeep?
No, it's white.
Okay.
I'm special. Right.
See how much she lets it be my own experience. It's yellow to her. It's white to me. You know.
Okay.
Just so you know, the New York Times posted an article on how to fold a fitted sheet.
Oh, I was going to screenshot it. Yeah. It's a thing. It was a thing for us.
You want to talk about character defects? Try to do a fitted sheet.
There you go.
Honest to God. And I would literally, I mean, lose my mind every time I did. And I'll be damned that Fred could not do a fitted sheet. And then I was mad at him over a fitted sheet. So I walked into Beth's house one day, and she's like, I can show you how to do a fitted sheet. I'm like, I never had a sponsor show me how to do a fitted sheet. And I still can't do it.
It's okay. It's okay.
And that's why I'm still here.
She masters that. She's out. So do you want to start with the book? What do you want to do? What do you want to look at?
Let's just start. Do it. We got half hour.
Okay. All right.
Can we do this in a half hour?
We can do this.
Okay. We agnostics, which, you know, is on the fence, not having, not knowing. All right. In the preceding chapters, well, we haven't learned that yet, but we know something about alcoholism. I mean, hey, none of us just ended up here by accident, right? We hope we've made the clear distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quite entirely you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. So there, you can qualify yourself right there. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And another word for conquer is defeat. You want me to keep reading?
Yeah.
You want to read? To the one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And that's kind of another, like, lean in or lean out. You know, we're asking, you know, it's asking you to make a choice.
And I just want to say that I've read that sentence to non-alcoholics, and they find that the most absurd sentence they've ever heard. And not raise your hand if you don't that totally makes sense to you.
Oh,
raise
yeah.
your hand if that makes sense to you. Not easy alternatives to faith. Dude, my father, huh?
What was the sentence?
To be doomed.
To an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to faith. My father-in-law is the most, I hope he never hears this, but my father-in-law is the most normal human being on the face of the earth. And he was just like, what? So, just so we're clear, if that sentence makes sense to you, and we're going to go back and do step one next week, I'm gonna ballpark it and say you're probably an alcoholic.
But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue. Hoping against hope, we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life, or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheist or agnostic. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. You know, and I love the way they say that. Like, cheer up. Like, okay, I can do a spiritual life or live an alcoholic death. Oh, God, I have to choose. Oh, cheer up. You know,
it's going
to
be okay.
Right?
Yeah, it's totally. We're going to get there.
Right. We are a sick lot, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. And I don't know about you, but I was raised in a home where I knew right from wrong. I was given morals. I was, you know, raised in a church. I believed in a God. My parents were happily married until my father died. Well, they were married. Yeah, they were happily married. For 54 years. No marriage is perfect.
Mostly happy.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
I was the youngest of four kids. I mean, it really, and I only know it in such detail because I tore my life apart, because that has to be the reason that I'm here. You know, there's something to blame. But, I mean, I had the morals. And with that, I could not overcome what was thrown at me with alcoholism. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. No, we try. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there.
So I have an assignment for everyone, and I really do implore you to take this journey with us. And I'm going to do it too, because Karen's going to remind me Tuesday morning to do the assignment before we show up tonight. See, Karen's got her notebook out. All right, so this is really about leaning in. If you're new, take everything we do to your sponsor. Just straight up, take it to your sponsor and be like, this crazy ladies, they came to the meeting, they told me to do this, they told me to show you. But how many people in here have completed this 12-step process at least once? All right, so the majority of you have been through this process and are probably living in agnosticism in an area of your life that you wish you weren't, right? I am. I'm still working on that whole parenting thing, man. Feeding kids. It's bullshit. So
explain what you mean by that, because you used to tell me a lot, like I would come to you and you'd say, well, you're being agnostic. And I'd be like, no, I believe in God. And I didn't understand.
So the definition I operate on agnosticism is I believe in God, but he has no stake in this area of my life. Right. So for the longest time, I could not hold a job for more than a year. Because I was always in control. Because it's a job. They're paying me money to do a thing. So I go and I do the thing. And it's this paragraph. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. So your assignment for this week. So agnosticism is moving through something, managing it. Managing parenting, managing the job, managing the marriage, managing my spiritual life, managing my TV time, managing anything in my life. You're agnostic, in my definition. So your assignment for this week is any time that you sit in meditation with your notebook is to really just, you know, for me, the word meditation means contemplative thought. The way that it meant, that was the official Webster's definition when the book was written, so that's what I go with. I want you to contemplate the areas of your life that you don't feel successful in, right? We're going to do the bedevilment exercise in a week or two. We'll do it again. But to really look at, like, where am I struggling in my life? And am I trying to manage it? Or do I really believe that I've given this to God and I'm just showing up? In the areas of your life where you're not agnostic, it's like weird miracle crap happens all the time. You go like, oh my God, a God shot. You're not going to be able to happen today. I'm like, yeah. You showed up and God was in charge and you won? Yeah, that makes sense. It's the areas of our lives. For those of us that have gone through this process before, it's time to lean in and get to the next level. If you plateau, you can stay there for the rest of your life and not drink, but you won't be the greatest version of yourself. And I never want to turn around and regret the opportunity of growth that I could have had, that I'm now having. I wish I had done this 5 years ago. Like, I don't ever want people to have to do that. So the assignment for this week is to reach in, really lean in to what your life looks like and figure out where are you managing and where are you the power, like you can't seem to continue to follow through and make that happen. Does that make sense?
I can give you an example that's going on in my life right now. Because when I first tried to understand where, you know, certain areas I would discuss with Ben, and she'd say, you're being agnostic. But here's one right now. We'll just say the guy I live with, not that I've mentioned his name on the tape, has some family issues with other children. And it has to do with drinking and drugging. And while I'm the expert in the house, and I really think he needs my input on these things. Well, you know, I'm not God. I'm not running the show. I can't control where and what they do. And, you know, and it has been strongly suggested to me that I'm to keep my mouth shut. But I want to so much tell him what he should be doing, how he should be acting, where he should be intervening, how concerned he should be, what steps he needs to take. That's me being agnostic, because I think, okay, I have a God, I trust him, but in this area, I need to be in control. So that's what, like, take that, you know, so obviously I'm number one on my list. It's looking at those kind of things. Where do you have this faith or this spiritual foundation that you've been building on, but where do you compartmentalize that and say, okay, I have a God, but not in this one, or not in this one, not in work, or, and it's kind of interesting what I know I came up with. So that's the example I have.
So the answer to this question is that in the next paragraph it says lack of power was that was our dilemma. Right? So all these areas in my life that I'm trying to manage is like a four-letter word in my house. Anybody says the word manage and everybody goes like somebody's expecting a lightning bolt to come through the roof. Like we avoid saying the word manage in my house. So I'm going to read this. Lack of power is our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? And it says it right here. That's what this book is about. Its main objective is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. I can tell you, I was on a marketing call. Like, so I'm in marketing, because I'm an introvert and I don't like people. And you watch what happens. You just start showing up to God, and God's like, oh, we're going to put you over here. I don't know what his deal is. So we all get on this call every, I don't know what day it is. I wait till my calendar. So anyway, we get on this call. It's 8:30 in the morning. I've barely got coffee in my system. And my numbers are really good. Like, I'm awesome.
Of course.
Let's face it. I'm awesome. But here's why I'm awesome. They ask me, Beth, you're the only person that's gotten this one category, like you've hit goal every single month in this one category. Nobody else has. What are you doing? And literally couldn't figure it out. And And my boss turns around. She says, Beth, are you still on the call? I'm like, yeah, I'm here. And so the national director of marketing for my entire company in the country is like, so what are you doing? And I'm like, I show up. I just show up. And I hear my boss shaking her head on the other line. Facepalm. My boss is facepalm. Because, yeah. When I have a God, God's going to put in my life everything I need. I was literally at a barbecue last night, and, like, this person walked over and, like, solved one of my biggest professional issues over the last 4 months. Just because this person walked over to me and I started talking to them. Why? Because they were standing next to me. And then the conversation got to this place, and they were like, so, yeah, so this is what I do. And I'm like, oh, my God, really? This is what you do? Because this is my issue. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's no problem for me. I can get that done by tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
Ding, 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 ding.
I'll call you on Monday. Totally lost her phone number. You got a little research to do tomorrow, whatever. But that's what life looks like, right? So this the objective of this book is to enable you to get a God that's going to do it for you. And then all you have to do is show up. I mean, it does really sound impossible. And that's why we're asking you to lean in. Because it literally, like, if somebody were to tell me without this, without knowing anything about this process, like, dude, just like, call people and then, like, show up. I'd be like, you lost your mind. I'm not doing that. But I do that.
Right.
Me too. And then my company thinks I'm awesome, so. And I can keep a job longer than a year now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's jump a little bit so we can get into kind of talking about.
I want to get to bridge to shore.
Yeah, where is that part? That's more towards the end.
All right. So I have underlined in my book on 46. Okay, it's the same page. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, right? That's a big. Oh, by the way, I love the way they just
lay aside prejudice.
Lay it aside. You don't even know you have prejudice at this point in the process. You don't know about prejudice until the fourth column of the inventory. And your sponsor telling you. Because it just went right over your freaking head. And express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results. So as I said at the beginning of the meeting, if you go home and you believe nothing other than the fact that Beth and Karen believe that there's some crazy power out there that's like, ooh, just show up, you get whatever you want. That's enough. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend the power which is God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and effect a contact with him. We began to be possessed. These are the promises. I think these are the second step promises, right?
Mm-hmm.
We began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took a few simple steps. So there are requirements in this. So when I say lean in, it means do the requirements. You don't get the 9-step promises until the 9th step. Stop expecting that shit to happen for you because you showed up at a meeting and didn't clear away any wreckage for 10 years. You know, that guy that goes to your home group that's been sitting in the same exact chair for 40 years, and if somebody sits in it, he gets all red-faced and his veins start popping out. I don't want to be that guy, do you? No. To lean in.
And it tells you the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. So here again, it's like, you know, you suit up and you show up and you will get results.
Mm-hmm.
Never
judge somebody's higher power. There are a few things that I will physically go to blows for. That's one of them. I hear some person who's a big book thumper in a meeting going, you can't have a doorknob as your higher power. I'll slap you. I will slap you.
So we're saying you can have any God of your understanding, anything that is greater than yourself. And that means, because that's all it tells us that we have to do. And I realized, like, some of the things I noticed when I thought that I was comfortable in my beliefs or my faith was when I had to defend it so much, or somebody else found it in a different way, I had to tell them, well, let me tell you how I did. For some reason, that made my faith insecure.
which means I was judging and all the prejudice, which, of course, I didn't see at that time. But, you know, that's... So when I notice... And the more comfortable I get with however you find it, whatever it is, just find it and have it, then I know I'm becoming... I'm growing in my own spiritual base.
Yeah. Anybody that has any criticism about your program, it's an unreasonable expectation because, A, they don't know where you're at. They're not you. And you're not supposed to be where they're at because you're not them. So have... Grow a set, and whether it's ovaries or otherwise, and have the strength to stand by your experience no matter what it is. And don't judge anybody else's.
Mm-hmm. We're all slapped.
Okay.
You want to read the next? I'm looking. I don't know where Bridge to Shore is. Does any big book like?
I just read it before. Yeah. Bridge to Shore. It is further back. I mean, it's.
You want to keep going, and then we'll get there.
Longer jump.
You got 10 minutes.
Oh yeah. Okay. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader.
48.
This isn't... I'm sorry, 48. And it says sometimes this was a tedious process. And, you know, here again, it doesn't matter how long it took you to get here, how long it takes you to get wherever you're going. I don't know. I don't even like how that sounds because, like, I thought I got there and then I was leaning out. So that's like a whole... dangerous thing in itself. There's no timeline. There's no finish line. It's just about being on the journey, being in the process, being part of it.
Page 56.
Yes, and it's way back.
Oh, I have it on 53.
Okay. 56.
Oh.
Bridge to Shore.
Oh, that's Bridge of Reason. Right. 56. Oh, it's at the end. So keep going.
All right. And you know, if you go like on to 50, if you read the personal stories that are in this book, I mean, the whole big book is about a spiritual journey. I mean, it's not just like in these couple, you know, where it says God clearly or higher power. I mean, every one of the personal stories is about their spiritual journey. I mean, that's the whole event from beginning to end. Is a spiritual journey, not just one section, not just chapter 4, we agnostics. You know, it approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself, even in our own personal stories, which every one of us here has a story to tell, you know. And it's talking about looking at the record. You know, there's been many areas in your life where you've had faith. I mean, what have you believed in? What have you continued to do because somewhere you just believe it's going to work? So if you think you're not capable of faith, you have a lifetime of things that show you are. Example of that? Come up with one for me. Come on.
Sorry.
Right?
An example of where I've had faith?
Yeah, before you, like, had faith. You know, like...
So it's really dark, but I just knew somebody was going to beat me up. I completely had faith that I would get knocked around at some point this week. And I always did, so there you go.
Exactly.
I always had faith that I would be able to pick myself up and keep moving forward. I always had faith that... I always had faith that I would never get caught. My faith was not correctly placed. I also had faith that I'd drive my Saturn off a overpass. So
I had faith that I really did know more than what other people knew, and that I could outsmart them and outwit them. And yes, you might believe what you're saying, but you don't know how I am and who I am, and I can figure my way out of this.
So God actually shined through to me at some point in my childhood. And again, I got sober at 17, so a lot of my drunkenness was I was a kid. And I always felt like it was a mistake
whenever I got in trouble, it was because I was misunderstood, because I didn't communicate clearly, and that is one of the reasons why I am very clear in my communication now. Like, I do not mince words. I mean exactly what I say, unless I use the wrong word in a sentence, which happens daily. But I always had faith that at some point my father would understand that he didn't understand me. And that actually did come to happen in recovery. It really did. And I had that, like, my whole life, beating after beating. It's, you know what I mean? I just remember going, this is a mistake. This isn't supposed to be happening. I didn't say something correctly. I didn't do something right. And my intentions were not known. I couldn't get it across what I meant. And that all came out in my late 20s, early 30s, before he passed away. So, yeah.
So there's a lot of things in life that we put faith into. I mean, the book talks about the electricity, turn on the light switch, and, you know, it's going to come on. And we don't understand how it all works, but I believe, I mean, I don't stop and think about and question when I flip the switch, is it going to come on? I just believe it's going to come on. You know, so why do we all of a sudden stop and say, well, I can't lean in? Because I can't believe, and I've never been a faith person, or, you know, it's all those preconceptions of. So if you look at your life, you'll see a lot of areas where you've been able to have faith about things. You've believed in things, you've done things, whether they were, you know, healthy for you or unhealthy. But faith has been evident if you look at the history of your life all along. So we're just asking you to take that into this direction.
So over on page, my book is 52.
I think we're the same.
We had to ask ourselves. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It says, we had to ask ourselves, the second full paragraph, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. And basically he's talking about, I think this is right after they talk about lunar flight. Like, and just for a little perspective, when they're like, oh, ask a longshoreman, which is a completely classist thing to write in a book, like, you know, because he just assumed the dumbest person on the face of the earth. Ask a longshoreman.
Right.
Yeah, ask a longshoreman if we go to the moon. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's going to happen any day now. Understand that that was written before we actually went to the moon, like 30-something years before we went to the moon.
Right.
So understand that we were totally ready to accept that, but we couldn't accept that there was a power greater than ourselves. So here it is. We're having trouble. These are the bedevilments, and this is another thing that you've got like 2 weeks to probably get through this, or 2 to 3 weeks before we really start to dig in on the third step. These are the bedevilments. This is the first exercise that I give everybody I sponsor. And you take each bedevilment, you put it on the top of a page. And every day you sit with these bedevilments anywhere between 5 and 15 minutes. And you just sit with them. And you ask yourself these questions every single day. And I'm going to turn it into question form right here. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? Where do I feel I can't control my emotional nature? Where am I prey to misery and depression? Where do I not feel adequate in my job? Where and when do I feel useless? Where and when am I full of fear? Where and when am I unhappy? And that's all of them. Oh, no. How and when am I not able to be of use to other people? And then it says, was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we should see news reels of lunar flight? And what he's really saying here is, wouldn't it just be nice to be free instead of right? Make a decision, lean in, and ask yourself, am I really going to write down on the paper the answer to those questions? Because I've got answers to those questions. I have a very awesome life. Other than having to feed my children 3 times a day. I have an awesome life. I have a job that was tailor-made for me. I have a boss that has literally helped me in every area of my life. My husband is amazing. He's a great, right? Everybody, my husband's a rock star. He's a little scary to strangers, but it's probably a good thing. But, you know, I have these two kids that are like polar opposites of each other, and I call one my moonshine and one my sunshine because they're just pulling me in every direction, and it does nothing but show me how awesome this life is, right? I have answers to these questions when I really lean in and sit down and go, where am I agnostic? Where am I managing? Where am I controlling? And where do I want to get better? And then at the end, it asks me in a very weird roundabout way, would you rather be happy or would you rather be right? Would you rather be free or would you rather be right? Would you rather be free or would you rather be in control? Because if you don't want to be in control, you're going to have to let go and lean in.
So it's telling you, I mean, that's your problem. You know, it lists them out for us. And I mean, and you can do those inventories and see them, you know, things jumping in your life all over the place. So, you know, we know what the problem is, and it tells us that the solution is God. And that it works. We had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. You know, so it's kind of getting to, as the chapter goes on, like God is or he isn't. It's kind of like leaning in or leaning out. And we all have those moments of truth in our life where we have to decide what we're going to do and which way we're going to go. And for me, like the surrender was like, I just couldn't fight anymore. You know, just kind of the hands up and like, I surrender. And admitting that I didn't know. I mean, the next paragraph goes on and talks about that, or on page 53. I mean, God forbid I ever admit I didn't know something. Because if you think I don't know, let me show you the degrees I have. And let me show you the letters I have behind me. I mean, just crap that I kept shoving in me, saying that I know, that I know, that I know. And it was almost the more I knew intellectually, the less I knew about me and emotionally. And spiritually, trying to I had a very hard problem admitting that I didn't know. And that has been one of the greatest freedoms in my life. Just to say, don't have a clue. I don't know. Even Sponsee comes to you and says, asks, and, you know, Beth taught me this. Like, you know, she's like, well, I've never had that experience. I can't share anything with you. But I maybe have somebody that could, or we can, you know. And I can do that with my sponsees. And it was like, wow, that's I kind of like that whole I don't know thing. That's kind of cool, you know. But there's somebody that does, which is even better. Okay. So it's talking about not ducking the issue, you know, and that we spend our life leaning on this, you know, reason, the God of reason, which was my thinking in my mind, you know, self-will. You know, I don't know many of us that get in here easily. That's where all the kicking and the fighting comes. So, like, how's that work for you? You know, it's asking you to take a look at that.
I think you're scaring people away.
I know, I guess so, huh? I swear. It's okay.
It's that shirt.
It's a new shirt.
Yeah.
You like my new shirt?
Yeah, ask her after when her shirt meets.
They know.
Oh, they know?
Okay.
See, I didn't know. There was something I did not know. I had to ask her.
Okay, so we're gonna jump. It's 8:30, so we're gonna jump up over to page 55 and just sum it up with this: is the reality of the situation is I've been through the work multiple times, and each time I gain more ground on becoming the person that I want to be, and therefore being able to be of service and live a life of purpose, which makes me feel good. I have self-esteem today because I do esteemable acts. And every time I go through the work, I learn new things that I can do to contribute to my life by contributing to others. And it says on the bottom of 55, second to last full paragraph, it says, we can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail.
It's a promise.
The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you if you lean in.
Right?
Yeah.
Word.
Thanks for letting us share.
Thanks.